We are creatures of desire. What we most desire is meaning. What makes us suffer most is a lack of meaning.
The Meaningful Life with Andrew G. Marshall. Marital therapist, author, and communications trainer Andrew G. Marshall invites guests from all walks of life to discuss what makes life meaningful.
Hello, I'm Andrew G. Marshall. Welcome to The Meaningful Life. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Podbean, and wherever you find your podcasts. Do you feel emotionally manipulated? Have you been told, "You're overreacting. You're being irrational. If you were a good partner, you would be more supportive"? Do you doubt the evidence of your own eyes because someone swears something didn't happen? And if it did, you're taking it the wrong way. These are all signs that you're being gaslighted. On today's edition, we take a deep dive and explain the three stages of being gaslighted and the three types of gaslighting. Dr. Robin Stern is a licensed psychoanalyst, educator, and author of The Gaslight Effect, and her new book, The Gaslight Effect Recovery Guide, Your Personal Journey Towards Healing from Emotional Abuse. Before we break down what gaslighting is and how to deal with it, I'm interested in how you came to this speciality. Did it find you, or were you destined to do this work?
Well, thank you, Andrew, and I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for elevating this topic and for inviting me onto your podcast. A little bit of both is the answer to your question. I do feel like I was called to do this work, especially as I see how it's unfolded after the publication of my book in 2007. It's now so many years later, and gaslighting is more popular than it was even at that time in popular discourse, and people are talking about it more frequently in therapists' offices, able to identify it themselves. When I first wrote my book, it was a surprise to most when I would use the word gaslighting. So that's the calling piece. The piece of how did it find me is I was in private practice, have been in private practice for many years, for three decades now, and I treated mostly women from my other affiliations in a women's leadership organization, and just through my own friend circle, I happened to have mostly women patients. They would come to my office, and women who would report feeling confident and self-possessed and really able to make good decisions and were successful in their lives outside of their intimate relationships would report that they felt this shaky sense of self and they didn't really know who to blame for it. So they thought there must be something wrong with them. They felt unmoored, if you will. They felt destabilized and not like themselves. And so when people begin to not recognize themselves, often at that point, they will seek out counsel or guidance. So those women found their way to my office. And every time I would hear of another case like this, or I'd listen to another person describing their experience, I would think of the movie Gaslight.
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember this movie.
So for our audience who are not old enough, of course, it was set in Old England and got its title from the fact that the protagonist in the movie, the diabolical husband who was trying to drive his wife crazy and trying to lead her to believe that she didn't know her own mind, that she didn't know what she was seeing, as you said earlier, that she didn't know what she was feeling or wanting, would flicker the gaslights. Because that was the way they lit their house, and some of the lights on the street were gaslights as well. And then Paula, the loving, adoring wife who believed that her husband was only after her best interest, at least for a long time in that story, would notice that the lights were flickering and ask someone who was living with her and her husband, "Do you see the lights flickering?" "Oh, no. No, Paula. The lights are not flickering." So there she was looking at flickering lights and being told, "No, your perception is wrong." And over time, because gaslighting is really over time, an overtime process, she began to think, well, maybe he's right. And then in addition to my patients coming in with those stories, I myself was in a relationship with my ex-husband, who was a really good guy and a gaslighter. So he was one of the types, the good guy gaslighter, very friendly, very easygoing, and yet had his own version of reality that he tried to get me to believe. And here's a very concrete example. When he would be late for dinner, and I would say, for example, hey, I wish you would give me a call. It's 20 minutes. Kids and I are waiting for you. He would regularly say things like, I don't have a problem with time. You have a problem with time. Who told you that time means exactly at that time? So maybe it's because of the way you were raised around time and your parents were very rigid. And when he first said that to me, I thought, no, this is just manipulation. But over time, even though I was writing the book at that time, based on gaslighting strategies and techniques that I heard from my patients reporting about their spouses, and I knew what was happening to me, I began to think, gee, I wonder if it's possible that I am a little bit more rigid than I'd like to be. I wonder if it's possible that other people really don't feel this way about time. And I kept having that experience. Do you know in cartoons when they have the person's head spinning around? I kept having the experience of, no, wait a minute, reality. It's disrespectful if it keeps happening, somebody's late and making appointments, and this is not cool. This is not respect. And I don't like it. I mean, you know, I don't feel listened to. I don't feel cared about. And over time, as I said, he is my ex-husband. So over time, we didn't stay married, not just because of the gaslighting, but other things as well. But that was part of it. And I could see for myself how compelling that wish was for him to see me not as wrong. You know, so I would defend myself and I would say, no, here's this example, here's that example, here's how other people interpret time. And yet, I could feel the second guessing myself.
So what are the signs that tell us we're being gaslighted?
Well, second guessing yourself is actually one of them. So if you find that you're second guessing yourself quite often, you may be in a gaslighting relationship. You are asking yourself, am I too sensitive or too paranoid or too much a dozen times a day? You often feel confused. You often feel like, wait a minute, am I going crazy? And unmoored is a word that I think really describes that feeling. Well, like there's nowhere to kind of hold on to. You're destabilized. You're always apologizing. You wonder if you really are a good enough wife, mother, sister, daughter. You can't understand why, with so many apparently good things in your life, you aren't happier. You can't understand why you don't feel like yourself. You have trouble making the simplest of decisions. And ultimately, in stage three, where you have been in this gaslighting dynamic for a very long time, people report that they feel like it's been soul-destroying to them, that it's so devastating that not only don't they recognize themselves, but they're actually in the shoes of the gaslighter, accusing themselves of the bad behavior or unwanted behavior or perceptions or being crazy. And when you are deep into stage three gaslighting, it's really hard to access any joy.
So we'll look at those stages a little bit later, but I'm wondering, is this getting more frequent or are we just more conscious of it?
I think we're more conscious of it. I think that people talk about it being more frequent, like you're gaslighting me. One couple I work with, when they have a disagreement, one of them is apt to say, you're gaslighting me. Well, gaslighting is different than having a disagreement. Gaslighting has the marker of the intentionality of the gaslighter is to undermine the reality. The intention of the gaslighter is to undermine the reality of the gaslightee, to lead their target to second guess themselves. And so that is not the same as, you know, I don't agree with you. I don't like that movie.
But I think what's sort of so destabilizing is you begin to misinterpret your own behavior. So, you know, you're doing this because you don't love your partner enough, for example.
Yes.
Rather than you just disagree or actually you don't want to do something.
Well, it's very interesting. I'll share a story with you because I heard exactly those words from my patient. I was treating a woman who was a lawyer in New York, and she was dating an executive in another company who had a very tight schedule. And he also happened to be married to someone else. So she didn't see him very often, and she was longing. She was in a place of emotionally like wanting and longing for him most of the time. And so they eventually set up a structure where she could call him at an appointed time of the day. It was something like 11 or 12 o'clock during the day when he could get free from what he was doing. And it wasn't convenient for her at all. She was often in the middle of something. She just didn't know how to arrange her schedule so that she would always be free. But she was afraid to tell him because she was afraid he would say to her, "If you really loved me, you'd make sure to be free." She was afraid not to make the phone call. She was afraid to tell him how she was feeling because she didn't want him to even think that she could pull out of their agreement. And it took her 2 years of twice a week therapy simply to say, "I'm sorry, I can't be available at that time. Let's find another. I do love you." Gosh. And in my office, she was distraught by the fact that he would think that she didn't love him enough. And it was a question of the framing of the act that he offered her. She bought it. "If you love me, you will call me. If you don't call me, you don't love me. See, it makes sense. You're not calling me, you don't love me." And so not only was that problematic for her, but she began to question how she framed other things. Maybe she wasn't really good at relationships. Maybe she really didn't know how to make close relationships happen. And maybe all of her failed relationships had been because she didn't know how to do it.
And there's possibly a grain of truth in all of those things. I mean, it's probably not the best kind of relationship situation to get yourself into when you're involved with a married man. It's not really a recipe for happiness. You know, there could be a soupçon of truth in all of that. But I suppose what's making it gaslighting is it's all about the woman and it's nothing about the man and the fact that he's in two relationships.
So I'm interested in what you're saying. When you think about when you said that there's a grain of truth in it, in that particular situation, it was, I think, straight out manipulation. Did she love him enough to abandon herself? No. Although she accommodated pathologically to most of his wishes, but ultimately, no, she wasn't willing to give up herself. But there's often that grain of truth. So let's say we have a meeting together. You say, "Robin, you know, I really enjoyed this podcast. We're going to meet." And so we set up a meeting and I get there and you don't show up. And I call you and I say, "Where are you?" And you say, "Oh, well, you know, I'm just running a few hours late." And I say, "Okay, I can't do that. Can we reschedule?" No, I really don't have any time for you. This was the day that I set aside, so please wait for me." You come and I say, "I'm so happy to meet, but I only have a short period of time now because we had to reschedule." You say, "What's wrong with you? You asked for this meeting. And can't you be more accommodating?" And I already think I'm over accommodating. But it's true, I'm not willing to go that extra mile.
But I suppose I'm thinking much deeper. I mean, first of all, I have to say that my problem is I'm super punctual. But anyway, let's stay with this. You know, I have to ask why you are hanging around for this version of me that is incredibly rude. And, you know, maybe it might be something about you that you'll be putting up with this terrible behavior from me.
Yes. And I would say to you, the first time I meet somebody, I'm likely to be pretty flexible. And if I can do it, I'm going to do it. If that were the second time or the third time, I would say exactly that. Like, what are you doing? Robin, what are you doing? But an even simpler example of that is where the truth is definitely something that knocks you into being less stable in your reality is, let's say two friends are planning to meet and one of them gets there and the other one arrives and first one is looking kind of anxious, feeling kind of anxious and says, you know, I want to talk to you about something. I've been feeling like you're pulling away from me the last couple of weeks. I haven't heard from you as much and, you know, wondering if I did something to offend you or are you angry at me? And her friend looks at her and says, oh my God, you are so sensitive. And maybe it's true that she's sensitive, but that still isn't an answer or a response to the fact that she hasn't been on the other side of that her friend hasn't been calling her, that her friend hasn't made time for her. And yet, so many times, the woman in that situation or the young girl, because it's kind of very common teenage pattern of bullying and emotional abuse, will walk away not thinking, but she didn't answer my question, walk away thinking, I'm so sensitive. Why am I so sensitive? Like, I wonder if, so there is that grain of truth. And maybe for someone else, it wouldn't be a big deal. But the point is that it is a big deal for that woman. So every relationship is unique, right? And maybe you cannot call me 10 times and I'm just going to be happy that you called me on the 11th. But maybe I'm not really happy and I need to say something to you. And then you're going to tell me there's something wrong with me.
So can you be gaslit by your parents, for example? Because my parents were often telling me I was far too sensitive and I shouldn't be upset about this.
Yeah. So the answer is, first of all, I'm sorry that you experienced that. It never feels good to have your feelings diminished. And yes, parents can and do gaslight kids all the time, and sometimes completely inadvertently. So like this, go to a grocery store at 5 o'clock, at least 5 o'clock in America, and you see kids like reaching for the cookies or reaching for a snack of cheese or something, parent grabbing their hand and saying, you are not hungry, you're tired. And that's not a gaslighting relationship. It's an attempt at perhaps gaslighting in the moment, certainly telling your kid what they feel. But interactions like that, when accumulated over time, lead kids to feel, I don't know my own feelings. My mother told me I thought I was feeling hungry. My mother told me I'm not. I thought I was feeling anxious. My mother told me I'm not. I'm just difficult. I thought I was feeling something. My mother said, no, you're just too sensitive.
So I'm going to give you a quote of your own I'd like you to unpack for me, because I think it's a really beautiful quote. Well, it's not a beautiful quote. It's a very apt quote, I think. Mm. Never listen to criticism that is intended to wound.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I like that quote also. And, you know, we are, as humans, built to kind of pay attention to what's not going well. We're often scanning the environment for what's wrong. And so when somebody tells us something about ourselves that's wrong, like really pay attention to it. Like you get a report card that's all A's and one B or B minus or C. Like, why did I get that C? Why did that happen to me today? Why did that person say that to me? And I think it's so important to consider where that's coming from. You know, is that comment, is that piece of feedback really a piece of feedback that's intended to help me? Or is that a criticism that's intended to wound me? And if it's a criticism that's intended to hurt me, that says more about you than it does about me. And I think that's really important. Like, why would you want to hurt me rather than what's wrong with me? And yet, for girls, for women particularly, but for men as well, you know, if you have black and blue marks, if somebody beats you up or if somebody curses at you and screams at you, very easy to say, they did it to me. But when somebody says something that wounds you, unless you're looking to see why is that person doing that, then you're looking to yourself and saying, he's right. I am inadequate. And women and girls are much more likely to point their finger at themselves than to point their finger at someone else and say, something wrong with you that you need to do that to me.
Mentioned women and girls a lot. Do women and girls also gaslight other women and men as well?
Yes, they do. We do. The reason I keep saying it in that way is that in my practice, the pairing I saw most often for 30 years was women coming in talking about their relationships with their gaslighters, the men in their lives with whom they had relationships that were dramatically different, as I said earlier, than any other part of their life, leaving them second-guessing themselves and insecure and uncertain. And for girls, it is a common way to hurt each other. No, well, I expected to be invited to that party, whatever, you're so paranoid. You know, could be a typical response. And I remember when I was writing my book, one of the people I wanted to read it was Rachel Simmons, who was an expert on teenage girls and many other things at this point in her life, and but women certainly, and differences between sexes in the workplace. Rachel does a lot of incredible work. But then she was writing and working with girls, and she said, oh my God, that is very often the way girls respond to each other. And what is that? It's like a denial of responsibility. It's, I'm on the hot seat. I don't want to answer you. Let's deflect it by my accusing you. I mean, it's very clever, actually, to guess. So
attack is the best form of defense, isn't it?
It is.
So let's look at these three stages of gaslighting. The first one is disbelief. So tell me about that.
Disbelief is a little bit like what I said in my former relationship, where when something was said to me that didn't jive with me about who I was, that's kind of silly. Or imagine that a couple's walking down the street and boyfriend says to girlfriend, stop looking at people on the street. They're flirting with you. And you know what? You're flirting back. I'm not flirting back. Don't be silly. They're not flirting with me. Get off my case. And at that point, the gaslightee, the target of the gaslighting, might think, that's just silly. Like, weird that he said that. I don't see myself as a flirt, and they're definitely not flirting with me. Next time they go out, and over time as they continue to go out, and the guy says the same thing to her, stop looking, they're flirting with you, and you're flirting with them right back. She begins to think, well, you know, he seems to be so certain of that.
So she starts keeping her eyes to the ground, sort of kind of thing, so that she can't be accused of it.
Well, that is the middle of that storyline, yes, that he asked her. In fact, in this one couple, he asked her, I want you to look at the ground. So that is not going to happen anymore. And then she did look at the ground and they stopped fighting. So when in this particular instance, she came into my office and described it to me, she said, he's right. Because we're not fighting anymore. And yet, as you progress from disbelief to defense, where you like, no, I'm not doing it, because the other response then is not to put your eyes to the ground, but rather say, no, that's crazy. I'm not doing that. I am not flirting. Listen, think about all the times that we've been in parties. I've never flirted with anyone else, and that isn't who I am, and please believe me, and okay, I'll look at the ground, so you will believe me.
So stage two is defense, and then stage three is depression.
Right. And I want to say one more thing about stage two. In the defense stage, it's a time where you're often ruminating over and over about a conversation. Was I right? Was he right? And it's important to stop, to pause when you feel yourself ruminating and think, wait a minute, like it's not about who's right. Do I want to be in this kind of process with someone where I'm obsessed with or ruminating constantly about that conversation?
So let's move on to depression, then the third phase.
So the third phase, great example I wrote about in my book, where a woman went shopping for dinner. And as she got to the supermarket, she realized, gee, they probably have run out of the fish that I was planning to buy, and my husband's favorite kind of fish. And I just really don't even know what to do. It must be right about me. I really don't love him enough to get to the supermarket on time. And he's right, because if I did really want to give him what he wanted tonight for dinner, I would have made sure to get here. And I just, he's right about me. I'm a loser. Like, I'm just never going to make it as the kind of person in the world, in a relationship I want to be.
And I can understand how that could be very depressing, and that you're going to be living under a cloud.
Living under a cloud and feeling hopeless that no matter what you do, there's always a reason that there's something wrong with you, because unless it works out perfectly, you've done it wrong because of some failure of your character or your feelings.
So there's three types of gaslighters. Let's start with the one we've already mentioned so far, which is the good guy.
Yes. So the good guy gaslighter is somebody who you get along with. You do have a lot of things in your life that you like, and you may even enjoy being with him. And usually when you have an argument, you'll get your way. But what you have to go through in order to get your way, for example, a couple long ago case of mine was arguing over the course of hours, in fact, probably the better part of a day, about whether or not they should go to visit this woman's family, his in-laws. And eventually he gave in and they went to see them. But while they were there, he was basically pouting. When they left, he complained about how much time they were there. And when she said to him, you know, this has been a really hard day for me. We fought all morning and we argued and you were pouting at my parents. And when she was telling him about the day from her perspective, he said to her, what is the matter with you? There's something really wrong with you. You are so ungrateful. You asked me to go to your parents and I went. And now all you're doing is complaining. And of course, to your earlier point and our earlier back and forth about it, there was truth in that. He did go and she was complaining. So she walked away and in our work together was having a very hard time with herself. Why wasn't I more grateful? Like, what's wrong with me? Maybe this is really a great relationship and I just don't see it.
And the one that I think I was expecting was the glamorous one.
Yeah.
This is much more in the dating field, isn't it? So tell us about the glamorous gaslighters.
So we are dating and really having a great time. And when we get together, you bring me flowers and take me to great places and tell me that I'm your soulmate and you've never met anyone so sensitive and so smart. And I'm just really feeling connected to you and feel the same way. And then I don't hear from you for 5 days. And I am thinking, like, what happened? I don't think I said anything wrong. Why did you stay away for 5 days? And I call you and I say, I haven't heard from you, and I leave a message. And then you appear the next day on my doorstep, like our usual Friday night date, with a present. And you say, so happy to see you. You know how much I care about you. I really missed you this week. And so I am caught in this moment of, wait a minute, I don't even know who to feel bad about during this week. Do I feel bad about myself that I was paranoid that I didn't hear from you? Do I feel bad about you that you didn't have the sensitivity to call me? Like, I don't even know where to think about it anymore. But here you are in front of me and I'm feeling all of my old feelings. And so I'm lured back into the bubble that you have created for me with me and are offering me right in that moment, like your hand, come into our bubble.
And if you speak up about it, you're spoiling the moment.
You're spoiling the moment. And you're likely to get a response like that. You're spoiling the moment. Like, what's wrong with you? Like a couple I work with who were at a dinner party, and she said to him, you know, I told you that if you, or we have an agreement that if you drink too much, we're going to leave. So I want us to honor that agreement because this is something that's been coming. And he just turned to her, cut her off and said, what is the matter with you? We're having such a great time. Do you want to ruin the evening? And she said, well, I don't really think I'm ruining, cut her off again. There is something wrong with you. You can't tolerate any deviation from perfection about what you want. And it went on from there.
So we've sort of explained what gaslighting is. How do you deal with it?
With great difficulty, with a lot of patience, with compassion for yourself, and over time. So first of all, we didn't talk about the intimidator gaslighter, who is someone who uses violence and threats and what I call the apocalypse, to the threat of the apocalypse, to keep you under control. So if you don't believe me, if you don't do it my way, if you keep resisting me in whatever way he's saying that, these things are happening. Nobody will love you anymore. You'll get fired if it's at the workplace. You'll lose all your security. I'm not going to take you anywhere with me again. But if you decide that you want to confront your gaslighter, and you, the reason I brought up the intimidator in that context is if you are afraid, don't. And if you feel you need to, for whatever reason, take somebody with you or do it online. Never put yourself in physical danger. Intimidator gaslighters can be closer to violence than you think. It has happened. I'm not saying it will happen, but protect yourself. And if you don't feel safe physically, just don't have the conversation. If you do feel safe, make sure you're choosing a time where you both have space and time to unpack something if you want. And I would start in a positive way, not about your behavior if you're my gaslighter, but I really want this relationship to work. And there are things that are in my way. I'm sure there are things in your way, but tonight, I wonder if we can talk about and you can hear one of the things that's really bothering me. And then go from there. And I would then explain the dynamic.
So you're saying that you have to be very careful not to fall into the empathy trap.
I'm glad you brought that up, because yes, there's the empathy trap and the explanation trap. And that's what I was going to say, is even before the conversation, you have to make sure, you have to check in with yourself and see where you are with your gaslighter. So are you somebody who is explaining away all their behavior? Well, you know, of course he's treating me like this. His mother was so controlling. Or rather than thinking, I can't stand the way I feel with him, like I'm just losing myself, like I don't know what's going on, you're saying, you know, wondering how he feels. And standing in his shoes, you kind of get lost, because you're seeing yourself. You're so good at being an empath. You can stand there and see what he sees, and it can be devastating to you. So if you can be clear that you're not vulnerable to the empathy trap, or if you're vulnerable to it, you're watching out for it. You're watching out for the explanation trap. And you're also checking in with your big feelings about not wanting to let go of the relationship and not wanting to be wrong either. So back in stage two, when you're defending yourself, part of what keeps you stuck in gaslighting is the strong wish that you, Andrew, don't think that I'm a bad person, and I can't somehow walk away from you until I know that you think well of me. And so that can keep people really stuck, even in those later conversations. And so what I would say is, if you know what happens, if you're able to sort out this truth from distortion in the conversation, wait a minute, no, I'm sorry, that's not what I said. Or no, Andrew, you're doing that thing now where you're making it about me when I was just asking you a question about yourself. Like, where were you? No, this is not about my being paranoid. Let's go back to where I was. And you're blowing it all out of proportion, or you're blaming me. So if you can begin there and begin with your positive intention, like, why are you doing this? Why are you not just walking away? If there's good reason for you to stay, you have kids together. Gaslighting is only a part of what happens. It hasn't always been like this. You could imagine the relationship flourishing if the gaslighting was gone. You could imagine your husband or your boyfriend or your partner really wanting to work on this. You could imagine yourself really wanting to work on this.
So is it worth calling it out and saying, I think you're gaslighting me?
Yes, I think you have to use the word.
Or just does that put more fuel behind the gas, so to speak?
Maybe. But I think in a conversation where you're starting out saying, I really want this to work, and this thing that we do, you're offering me your hand in this thing that's called the gaslight tango, and I'm taking your hand. And so I want us to stop doing that because it's really hurting the relationship. And also, I am beginning to not trust my own judgment and feel good about myself.
I like that way of putting it because it's sort of, instead of turning it around and saying, it's not my problem, it's your problem, we're actually looking at the dynamic between the two of us and how we get into the dance. And that seems more constructive.
And I think importantly, so the listeners are not thinking that I'm blaming the victim because people have said, well, I don't know what I'm doing. What are you talking about that I'm walking into it? When you take somebody's hand in that gaslight tango, you don't know that you're getting involved in gaslighting where you're about to feel diminished and abused. You think that you're having a different kind of interaction. Somebody is inviting you into their way of thinking, for example. And so as long as you can continue to keep your boundaries in that hard conversation, you can take their hand and say, see, this is happening now. So keeping like a metacognition going on, you know, but you're looking at what's happening while it's happening, which is hard to do.
So I've got an example from my post bag, and I'm going to be interested to know if this is gaslighting or not. And then we can look at in detail about how we might be able to break this dynamic. And that's happening in just a moment.
The Meaningful Life with Andrew G. Marshall. Please follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and visit our website, andrewgmarshall.com/podcast, where you can join our supporters club and unlock bonus material and other benefits.
If you'd like to send me a letter, you can go to my website, andrewgmarshall.com/podcast. There's a section there called Participate in the Program, and you can send a letter that way. You can make suggestions of topics for us to cover too. My wife and I have two children together, a boy aged 14 and a girl aged 10. We recently separated. I wanted to save the relationship, but she became increasingly angry, would yell at me in front of the children and pull them into our disputes. For example, I was working in the garden and asked my daughter if she could get me a glass of water. I had muddy hands, and she came back with a look of shock on her face. Mum says you should get your own water. Then my wife came storming out and emptied a pitcher of water over my head. I kept my temper, but only just. Sometimes I thought she was just pushing and pushing to get a reaction, so she had final proof that I was the bad one. I left because it was better for the children and my sanity, but she told them it's because I don't love them enough. A real man would fight for his kids. She told my son that I'm lying when I say I can't get off work for his football match. She also badmouths my mother and won't let me bring them to her house. She has never liked my family. We tried counselling, but she shuts me out, gives a long list of my complaints, and speaks over me when I say I don't see it that way or in some cases it didn't happen. My son keeps himself to himself and says nothing, but I'm worried my daughter is turning into a mini version of my wife. Nobody believes me or says I'm exaggerating that she's turning the children against me, but she comes across so plausibly. So, I thought before we start answering this, I mean, I'm thinking this is gaslighting going on. Am I being right?
From my perspective, she's definitely attempting to gaslight him. I don't know if he will take her hand in that gaslight tango, but that is an invitation to the gaslight tango. And if she says those kinds of things to her children, it's likely to have more power. And the kids are likely to be swept up in that belief system. Put yourself in his situation, and I'm your wife, and I say, a real man would XYZ. And you think, I don't know, I am a real man and I do love my children and I do fight for my children. She's not right. I could go further with that, and maybe she did, and tell you all the times that you didn't seem to do that, and maybe you need to really look at what the hell's going on with you because there's something wrong with you. And maybe over time, if it persisted, you would think, maybe she's right. Maybe I'm not doing enough. But then he left. So at what point did he leave? Did he leave because he didn't want to enter the gaslight tango? Did he leave because he was beginning to feel vulnerable to her attacks and to believing them. But the scary piece for me is that if she says those kind of things to her kids, then her kids think to themselves, well, my mother wouldn't lie to me. My father wouldn't lie to me. And they're much more likely to be destabilized and to second guess themselves. But I thought my dad really loved me. But my mom is saying that he left, and if he left, he didn't love me enough to stay. He didn't love me enough to fight. And I know she wouldn't lie to me. So it just makes kids crazy in that situation because, of course, he's probably saying everything. I love you. I had to leave. This isn't a healthy situation for you. It's not good for me. It's not good for your mom. And I love you. But she's saying he doesn't love her. And so she's saying he doesn't love the kids enough to stay and fight for them. So I worry that the kids will be gaslighted.
So what advice would you give to this man?
Straight up conversation. Tell the kids how you feel. You can't convince your kids that their mother doesn't love them. It wouldn't be a good way to approach it or the best way to approach it. I think you have to say things like, your mother and I see that very differently. I don't agree with her. Think about what happens when we spend time together. Think about how much you know I love you. And I mean, you might even go so far as to say sometimes your mother says things when she's angry that, or sometimes we all say things when we're angry that could be said in a better way. And your mom is angry at me. And I believe that's why she's saying those things about me. We all know it isn't true.
So how should this guy approach his wife about this?
From your description, it's going to be pretty hard because she sounds very angry. So, you know, I have a lot of questions as a therapist. How did they get to this place? What was their marriage before? What kind of communication did they have before? Why is she so angry? It's hard for me to imagine in the state that you described that she would be amenable to a conversation. But again, a conversation would be the beginning. We both love our children. Can we come to something positive? And in this case, something binding, like something that they clearly both feel the same way about would be perhaps a good beginning. Or even maybe just something about her. I know how much you love the children. I love the children too. Or we both love the children. But this dissension between us is really hurting them. And I wonder if we could consider, and you would consider, having a truce while we talk more about how we can communicate about each other to the kids. That would be a beginning.
How could we put a truce in place?
Well, he's already not living there.
Yeah, he's left.
Right. So we could decide that we're going to communicate about the kids because, of course, we have to. And let's come up with some kind of a signal when either one of us feel like it's going downhill. Let's have a signal. Either I'll put my hands together, or you can hold up your hand, or some kind of a signal or an agreement that this is not productive right now. Let's come back to it another time. Maybe it's just a few words and then revisit it another time. Because of course, we both want the best for our kids. So we're going to have to find a way to talk about it. And there are times people are so angry, there's no way. I am never going to have a conversation with you. And then in a divorce case, you might have to talk through a child advocate. You might have to involve a counselor. You might have to involve your attorneys.
Because normally when you have one party who's very angry, you normally find that with two parties, they're very angry. One of them might be angry in a passive kind of way, and the other one might be angry in an active sort of kind of way. And, you know, I think he has every right to feel angry as well. But is he actually expressing any of this anger to somebody? Is he talking to somebody about it? Or is it sort of leaking out, which makes the whole situation more volatile?
Yeah, and I would say, you know, it's very hard to know what, it's really impossible to know what someone else is feeling without asking them or without them telling you. And he may be angry, he may be hurt. Maybe hurt over what's happened, and maybe that hurt masquerades as angry. because sometimes behavior is not the same thing as emotion. So when you have angry behavior, whether it's on her part or his part, maybe that's a disguise for what they're really feeling, or maybe that's how that person learned to express hurt. So I would be interested in a marital therapist or a child advocate who could sit down with them. I mean, in recommendations for this couple, if that would be possible. And the one thing that I don't know from your example is, or from this letter, is what's their history? You know, have they gone through these times where they are at each other and then there's a softer, smoother, more respectful, compassionate time that they have together over years? Their kids are 10 and 14, so they've been together for some time. So maybe there's a history of some positive communication that they could rely on. But certainly it's possible both of them are angry and they're just expressing it differently. And it's also possible and likely that both of them are hurt.
And so that's, I'm coming up with another good question based on what you're saying. You know, when we were able to communicate, remember those good times, what allowed us to communicate so well? What can we bring back from that time that will allow us to talk about this in a different kind of way?
Exactly. And maybe what allowed that was that there was an absence, even if there was an argument, an absence of criticism or an absence of manipulation or an absence of direct put downs. Like I personally don't do well with cursing, with put downs, with abusive language. So if you want to engage me in conversation, you need to know that about me. And if you know that about me and you want to have a conversation, then let's eliminate those things.
Well, we're beginning to get close to the end of our program. So I need to ask you, as a witness on The Meaningful Life, what makes your life meaningful?
My relationships and my work and the hope for the future. So my relationships, starting with my two children, my husband, my family and close friends, and the important work I do to hopefully help other people have a chance to have a meaningful life. I don't want to leave the show, though, without saying that people are not born gaslighters. People say, well, you know, what kind of a person can be a gaslighter? Well, any kind of a person who feels destabilized in the moment needs to be in power in that relationship and happens into it or has been taught that gaslighting is an acceptable strategy by watching it, by being the target of it. And it's socially learned behavior. It is not a clinical diagnosis. And I think that's really important because if somebody can learn it, they can unlearn it too with motivation.
That's a really good point to make. So if this conversation is going to continue in the bonus material, we're going to be looking at gaslighting at work, how to spot it and how to deal with it. And if you want to hear that bonus material, you can subscribe directly via Apple or Spotify. And if you want to become a supporter of The Meaningful Life and unlock the bonus material that way, here are the details.
You've been listening to The Meaningful Life with Andrew G. Marshall. You can follow Andrew on Twitter, like him on Facebook, and please leave a review wherever you consume your podcasts. Making, editing, and distributing The Meaningful Life comes with substantial costs, and we'd like to ask for your help. Visit our website, andrewgmarshall.com/podcast, where you can join our supporters club and unlock bonus material for every program, send in a letter to be discussed by Andrew and his guests, and join a community of other people seeking to make their life meaningful. At the gold level, you get even more benefits. Production of The Meaningful Life with Andrew G. Marshall is by Michael Dooney. Social media by Madeleine Healy. Sound engineering and theme tune by Sebastian de la Luz Mendoza. And I'm Susie Kolick. Please tell your friends and spread the word. Thank you.